So I asked Google this week if it would give me some quotes regarding what's the most important or what's the main thing in life. And believe it or not, I got back kind of what I expected to get. Anybody who's lived in the last 150 years or so has said something along the lines of what's the most important thing in life. Incidentally, no one was quoted as saying the chief end of man is to glorify God and enjoy him forever, which I'm sure many of you would have answered. As a whole, there were some common themes. People said, oh, love is the most important thing. Family is the most important thing. Hard work, being calm and steady, investing in other people. Things like this that sounded really good were the most important thing in life. Some other things didn't sound quite as good, like pursuing your own happiness, going after self-fulfillment. These are the most important things in life. Thankfully, there were actually some well-known Christians who made this, you know, these lists of quotes, and they said some really wise things as well. But ultimately, rather than quoting someone and maybe being distracting and trying to remember why they were famous or whatever, I just decided to go ahead and stick with the Apostle Paul. Thought that was safe. So what does Paul say about the most important thing in life? So over in Philippians 3, just by way of introduction, Paul says this: "Brothers, I do not consider that I have made it my own, but one thing I do, forgetting what lies behind and straining forward to what lies ahead. I press on toward the goal for the prize of the upward call of God in Christ Jesus." And in the verses prior to that, we see Paul talking about what does this mean? What does this mean? This is his desire to know God and to know Christ and become more like him. So that's the big thing for Paul. And notice it's just not just this desire that Paul has, but it's something that he's pressing on, he's pursuing hard after. So there's another biblical character that makes a similar statement about one thing, which maybe you're not aware of. I wasn't. But in Psalm 27, David uses similar language. He speaks of thing being the one thing. So if you want to turn to Psalm 27, we'll take a look at that tonight. Psalm 27 of David. "The Lord is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? The Lord is the stronghold of my life. Of whom shall I be afraid? When evildoers assail me to eat up my flesh, my adversaries and foes, it is they who stumble and fall. Though an army encamp against me, my heart shall not fear. Though war rise against me, yet I will be confident. One thing have I asked of the Lord, that I will seek after, that I may dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life, to gaze upon the beauty of the Lord and to inquire in his temple. For he will hide me in his shelter in the day of trouble. He will conceal me under the cover of his tent. He will lift me high on a rock. And now my head shall be lifted up above my enemies all around me, and I will offer in his tent sacrifices with shouts of joy. I will sing and make melody to the Lord. Hear, O Lord, when I cry aloud, and be gracious to me, and answer me. You have said, seek my face. My heart says to you, your face, Lord, do I seek. Hide not your face from me. Turn not your servant away in anger, O you who have been my help. Cast me not off, forsake me not, O God of my salvation. For my father and my mother have forsaken me, but the Lord will take me in. Teach me your way, O Lord, and lead me on a level path because of my enemies. Give me not up to the will of my adversaries, for false witnesses have risen against me, and they breathe out violence. I believe that I shall look upon the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living. Wait for the Lord. Be strong and let your heart take courage. Wait for the Lord." So today for outline, we'll look at three things. We'll look first at David's desire. That's the one thing statement he makes. And then we'll also look at David's reality and David's confidence. So first of all, David's desire. So this is the one thing. What is the one thing for David? David desires close fellowship with God, knowing and worshiping God, dwelling in God's presence, and enjoying God's protection. So in these three verses, we see diverse language that David uses. He uses the phrase, dwell in the house of the Lord. In verse 4, he also speaks of temple, and that's like a royal palace. He speaks again more leaning towards worship in verse 6 when he speaks of offering in the tent. And then in verse 5, he uses three other words, shelter, tent, and rock. And these words speak of God's presence and protection. So Spurgeon has quite the passionate commentary on this passage. It's really good to read if you guys have a chance. And something he said about these verses is that David desired above all things to be one of the household of God, a homeborn child living at home with his father. And I guess now that I'm a father and I have children, and I come home and my kids are incredibly excited to see me in the evening, and I think, man, that's that simple, incredible emotion, and that's kind of what David is having. He's using all these different words to describe how he desires to be with God. So I want to focus in particular a little bit more on verse 4 and the aspects of David's worship in verse 4. So towards the end of verse 4, David says, his desire is to gaze upon the beauty of the Lord and to inquire in his temple. So the word gaze here carries the idea of mentally perceiving and contemplating with pleasure. So David is contemplating with pleasure the beauty of the Lord. So I think if we're kind of paying attention to what's going in the world around us, or maybe not, we're just kind of going through everyday life, we have a fairly good understanding of not beauty, right? We understand well what's not beautiful. We can, you know, read headlines and listen to the news, and we see that the world is full of ugliness all over the world, in our own country, across the world, everywhere. We see ugliness. We see evil and sin running rampant. And the beauty that the world purports to offer is often just fake beauty or fleeting beauty that doesn't last. But thankfully, God has revealed true beauty in himself. So as I was looking through verses that had the word beauty, God was kind and I stumbled across Psalm 96. So rather than me trying to detail a bunch of things about the beauty of the Lord, I'll let the psalmist in Psalm 96 do it. So if you guys want to flip over to Psalm 96, and we'll read this together. I'll give you a second. So as we read this passage, let's not just focus on the passionate response that the psalmist has. There's lots of words of praise and worship. But let's also make sure that we flag in our minds and pay very close attention to God's beauty. Let's pay attention to God's character and works. So Psalm 96. Oh, sing to the Lord a new song. Sing to the Lord, all the earth. Sing to the Lord, bless his name. Tell of his salvation from day to day. Declare his glory among the nations, his marvelous works among all the peoples. For great is the Lord and greatly to be praised. He is to be feared above all gods. For all the gods of the peoples are worthless idols, but the Lord made the heavens. Splendor and majesty are before him. Strength and beauty are in his sanctuary. Ascribe to the Lord, O families of the peoples. Ascribe to the Lord glory and strength. Ascribe to the Lord the glory due his name. Bring an offering and come into his courts. Worship the Lord in the splendor of holiness. Tremble before him, all the earth. Say among the nations, the Lord reigns. Yet the world is established. It shall never be moved. He will judge the peoples with equity. Let the heavens be glad and let the earth rejoice. Let the sea roar and all that fills it. Let the field exult and everything in it. Then shall all the trees of the forest sing for joy before the Lord, for he comes. For he comes to judge the earth. He will judge the world in righteousness and the peoples in his faithfulness. So this was, I was really excited when I read this passage, because this is just this amazing, power-packed, worshipful psalm. And just to review of something, the psalm speaks of the Lord's salvation, his marvelous works, the fact that God is far above all gods, that he is the creator, that he is full of strength and beauty, that he is worthy of worship and offerings, that the Lord reigns, and then finally talking about judgment with equity, righteousness, and faithfulness. So this is an amazing passage, just exudes the Lord's beauty. And There was a day this week when I came home and Adrian was holding Jackson, and I just looked at him and I thought, what kind of world is he going to grow up in? You know, and I think those of us that are parents and we look out, and those of us that are not, you know, it can be difficult. You know, what kind of world is coming? And this verse right in the middle, verse 10, was just incredibly comforting and encouraging. And I found it a couple days later. So, say among the nations, the Lord reigns. And that's the kind of world, ultimately, even though there's all this sin and evil that's in the world, ultimately the Lord reigns. So I hope that can be comforting to us, even when we see things occurring that, you know, would make us concerned for the future. Okay, so that's the first phrase was to gaze at his beauty. The second thing, inquire at his temple. So it is absolutely crucial to know God. I guess probably last week, I wasn't here, but last week Neil, I think, preached in John chapter 17 in the beginning of the chapter, and 17:3 says, and this is eternal life. That's what Jesus says, that they may know you, the one true God, and Jesus whom thou hast sent. So knowing God is absolutely crucial. And furthermore, it's a directive directly from God. Another passage that speaks of this is Jeremiah 9. Jeremiah 9, verses 23 and 24 say, thus says the Lord, let not the wise man boast in his wisdom, let not the mighty man boast in his might, nor the rich man in his riches. But let him who boasts in this, that he understands and knows me, that I am the Lord, who practices steadfast love, justice, and righteousness in the earth, for in these things I delight, declares the Lord. So God gives us the directive and tells us how crucial it is that we know him. And as I was reading these passages, I was reminded of something that Pastor Shane often says, is that how theology and worship really do go hand in hand. So as we come to this verse in Psalm 27 and thinking about gazing on the beauty of the Lord and inquiring in his temple and thinking about Psalm 96 and this passage in Jeremiah, let's remember that as we gather around his word and learn to know God, we also can grow in our worship of him. Okay, so now for the difficult questions, perhaps. Do these verses 4 through 6, describe accurately the character of our relationship with God? So this is a really hard question. It's very convicting, and it kind of hurts to ask, but the passage requires that we ask it. So, I will admit that instead of desiring God's presence, I often desire to be by myself. Thankfully, my responsibilities in life prevent me from doing this. There is no running into the closet. There is no vacationing in Hawaii. I can't typically be by myself, but that desire is often there when life is hectic and busy and difficult. That can be one response. Maybe a better response that I have is I just want to be with Adrian. That sounds better. It is much better. She loves me incredibly. She's my best friend. There's no one else I'd rather be with. I would like to run to her. Yeah, the question that needs to be asked is, can I really say that the main thing in my life is that I want to know and worship and walk with and run to God? So this is really convicting, and I hope that we can give thought to it. But the good news is, even though that's a difficult question to ask, there's some really big encouragement in the remainder of the psalm. So even David, his relationship with God is far from perfect. I think we know this, but even in the context of this psalm, it's very clear. Though his desire is strong, his relationship, these verses, are more towards the ideal, and we'll see some of his struggle. Which brings us to the next thing, which is David's reality. The reality is, and we see this in the prayer in verses 7 through 12, the prayer reveals that while he does seek after God, he is in a struggle against internal and external enemies. So just several things about this prayer. First of all, verse 7, he's crying out to God. This is intense desire. Be gracious. Answer me. And secondly, just like with Paul, how he had more than just a desire, David's desire is not just a hope or a plan without action. And so we see in verse 8, that he has responded to God's demand. God demands that we seek after him, and David knows this, and he has responded. He understands well, I'm sure, the verse in Deuteronomy that says, "Seek the Lord your God, and you will find him, if you search after him with all your heart, and with all your soul." So David not only has this desire, but he has action to go along with it as well. And then after that, we kind of see the struggle that's going on. So we see in verses 9 and 10 that David has some significant concerns with the enemy, regarding the enemy within himself, and that's sin. So sin isn't explicitly mentioned in these two verses, but I think it seems very clear based on the language in these verses and what we would see in other writings that David would have, that when David is saying things like, "Hide not your face from me, turn not your servant away in anger, cast me not off, forsake me not, O God of my salvation," David is very much acknowledging that he has a struggle within himself against sin. And then lastly in this prayer, in verses 11 and 12, we see that David's adversaries is not just the sin within himself, but external as well. And he's asking for wisdom to walk in God's way in the midst of his enemies. So if we read this prayer of David in these few verses, I think we could all agree that David would agree with Paul. When Paul says in Philippians 3, "Not that I have obtained or am already perfect, but I press on." So David, looking at these earlier verses, when we see David's desire, ultimately that will be fulfilled only in heaven. But while he has this desire, day to day his reality is that he struggles against sin and against his enemies, the world, the flesh, and the devil. Both Paul and David are in need of God's grace to seek him and to fight against the world, the flesh, and the devil. And so are we. All right, so that's David's reality. Now moving on, what confidence does David have? So let's look at David's confidence. And David does something I think is really interesting. In the beginning of this psalm and the end of the psalm are like bookends that just extol and instill great confidence in God. In the beginning of the psalm, David talks about God being his stronghold, that he doesn't fear, how that his adversaries have fallen around him, and he can be confident. And I think we all know well from David's life that God proved himself over and over and over again. And looking towards the future, David makes other very confident statements. Verses 13 and 14. "I believe that I shall look upon the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living. Wait for the Lord, be strong, and let your heart take courage. Wait for the Lord." So David expresses confidence that even though he has the struggle against sin and his enemies, that really God will come through, and that he can dwell with God. And these amazing thoughts about worshiping and knowing and dwelling with God and enjoying his protection can indeed happen. So just in closing, like David, we can have confidence that God can help us to desire and seek after the main thing. And what is that? It's to dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of our lives, to gaze upon the beauty of the Lord, and to inquire in his temple.